What I'm about to play for you is a 20-year-old recording of a teenager named Alistair Glamis. The recording was recovered by Tom Allegost from a vinyl record contained in the slipcase for the soundtrack to the 1964 movie Mary Poppins. It is Alistair performing a piece from Hamlet. In fact, he's performing as both Hamlet's father, who is a ghost, and Hamlet himself during Act 1, Scene 5 of the play. Why am I playing this for you? This is the longest unbroken recording of Alistair's voice that I have in my possession, and I want you to hear him, unedited. I want you to hear Alistair as I remember him. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 2, Murder Most Foul.
My father's spirit, doomed for a certain time to walk the night and for the day confined to fasten fires, till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away. But that I am forbid to tell the secrets of my prison house, I could a tale unfold whose lightest word would harrow up thy soul, freeze thy young blood, make thy two eyes like stars start from their spheres, thy knotted and combined locks to part, and each particular hair to stand on end like quills upon the fretful porpentine. This eternal blazon must not be to ears of flesh and blood. List, list, oh, list! If thou didst ever thy dear father love, oh God, revenge is foul and most unnatural murder. Murder! Murder most foul.
By the time this recording was uncovered by Tom Allegost, I had been lying to my family and friends for many weeks. I was allowing everyone around me to believe that I knew nothing about the 20-year-old disappearance of Alistair Glamis. In truth, I was living a nightmare. I was pushing Tom to uncover more and more so I could prepare the eventual audio project, the broadcast, the Disappearance Podcast. It was very early on that I knew there was going to be a problem.
It's Shakespeare.
Yeah, it's from Hamlet.
But it's more than that. The ghost describes the torments he undergoes in purgatory before pleading with his son to avenge his murder.
I had no idea you were so well-read, Tom.
My wife's an English teacher. It rubs off, whether I want it to or not. So what do you think?
What do I think of what?
Why in the world would there be a recording of Alistair talking about murder, talking about revenge? Don't you think there could be something here? Like he knew what was coming?
You think Alistair was murdered?
I don't know, man. In most of that recording, he's playing the part of the ghost. That must mean something. What if the albums are clues to solving a murder? This is like the Beatles.
I don't follow you. Do you mean the band or the insect?
The band. Well, they weren't just a band. They were the most influential act of the rock era. But I'm referring specifically to what Paul McCartney himself confirmed years ago, that he and his bandmates left clues on their album covers and in their songs, all part of an extensive plan.
A plan to do what?
To convince the public that Paul was dead. There are tons of clues, song lyrics, album covers, photos.
But Paul McCartney isn't dead. Carol and I saw him perform at Fenway Park a few years ago.
I know, I'm just saying, maybe Alistair Glamis pulled a Paul McCartney and tried to convince everyone he was dead. Maybe he meant for you to get this collection of records long ago in order to corroborate the plan for him, but you never got it until now.
Even then, I could tell that Tom's natural curiosity was going to endanger him. Endanger all of us. My desire for him to simply decode the recordings was not going to be enough for him. He was going to dig deeper, whether I wanted him to or not.
Lover, your love is like pure danger. Your heart is the dark stranger, asking for a
growing higher, the smoke is in my eyes.
Obviously, this played out in different ways with different versions of John Herman and Tom Alagost. But with my Tom Alagost, I tried to cut him off before he discovered too much. One night, I called him and told him that I came to the conclusion that Alistair Glamis probably just ran away. Just walked out into the Great Northern Woods and got lost. And that the records were probably just an art project, which was one of his own early theories. I thanked Tom for his work and told him that I was no longer interested in finding out what was on the rest of the records. I hoped it was enough. You and I have learned what happens when John Herman doesn't know to stop Tom Alagost. Over and over again, as different versions of our interactions have played out, Tom Alagost's curiosity drives him to uncover more and more until it is too late. And he's looking into his own eyes, beyond the mirror, as Alistair would say. Allow me to go back 20 years. For a week after my first strange conversation with Alistair Glamis, during which he played a recording of my voice that conflicted with the words that had come out of my mouth, I avoided him. I didn't know what to think. Alistair tried to corner me before I could get away, but I would always push past him. Meanwhile, I was up all night, every night, wondering how and why the new kid had recorded and re-edited my voice. It seemed like more than a prank. He had said that if I didn't help him, then he would be dead soon. That doesn't sound like the premise for a joke. Alistair proved very hard to avoid. He and I shared a physics class together, and eventually he migrated his seat next to mine. He sat right behind me. I could tell he was watching me during every class period. One day he cornered me again, and I didn't run. In fact, I had communicated to my parents that I was meeting a friend after school and that I would eventually need a ride. That day, when Alistair cornered me, I demanded he explain everything. Clearly pleased that I had finally come around, he suggested we walk out into the middle of the school soccer field. When we reached the center of the field, it was clear that Alistair had been waiting for that very moment, because he took out his recorder again, and he played a second recording of me. Well, except that I assure you that it was a conversation that we had never, ever had. I was saying words that to this day I have not said. I sat in the grass, and Alistair asked me if I ever wondered what the world would be like if I had never been born. From anyone else, it would have been such a cliched question. But from Alistair, the question lost all of its whimsical charm. He told me that he was living inside that premise. He said he wished he could stay here, in a world devoid of him, but that the others felt the same. And they were coming. And they were coming for me. I asked him who was coming. He only said that he had other recordings, older ones, recordings his father made that I needed to hear. He said the recordings would explain more than he ever could, and that I needed to plan a day to go to where he lived, a small cabin secluded in the woods, so he and I could listen to them together.
Is this loud enough? So we listened to some of the recordings just now.
I want to know your thoughts, whatever they are.
They were strange.
That's my wife, Carol. When I received Alistair's box in the mail 20 years later, I immediately ran out and purchased a record player. I knew that the vinyl records Alistair and I had made had been waiting, patiently, for 20 years. But I still had to hear them with my own ears. I needed to know that the nightmare I had been trying to escape wasn't just that. A nightmare. A dream. I needed to know that my past really happened. When I got the player set up, I sat down with Carol, and I played some of those recordings. As the records were playing, I remember Carol saying that she thought that they were ruined, possibly warped from age or neglect. I told her that I didn't think that was the case. We may have listened to 3 or 4 of the records before I realized I needed to record her. This was the beginning of the project. I told her that I would be making an audio project based on the records, Alistair's disappearance, all of it. I knew it even then. What I didn't tell her was that I was on a desperate hunt to find out whether the recordings were mine or from another place. Another world.
I find them unnerving.
What was strange about them? Can you put it into words?
They're all messed up. What do you want me to say?
At the suggestion of Carol herself, I contacted her friend Julie Allegost's husband. He was a good guy, Tom. He is a good guy. It was a delicate dance working with Tom. Alistair and I had painstakingly altered the recordings in his cabin, employing equipment that his father used to record and edit guided meditations. I just couldn't tell Tom outright what he was looking for.
The noise floor is really high and there's a lot of wow and flutter. Nothing is consistent. I've been using an algorithm based on chaos theory to deconvolute the audio. The processing is time-consuming, but I'm uncovering things little by little. I'm also reversing the audio. It was backwards.
Tom's journey plays out the same in many of the other places I have visited. For me, Tom uncovered everything I gave him, until I had to cut him off. His thoughts about the project were developing beyond my control, and I was beginning to see the dangerous curiosity that caused a young man to be attracted to Alistair Glamis's secret world like a moth to a flame. That yearning for the unknown was sparked within Tom, and 2 weeks after I cut him out of the project, he called me.
This isn't some kind of art project.
What are you talking about?
The records. You know what I mean.
I told you to delete the files.
Of course I didn't delete them. To be honest, I've been working on them every night. I've uncovered some things. Some really disturbing things, John.
Tom.
You talked to him on the recordings on multiple occasions, but you knew that, didn't you?
Tom, please.
Please what? What is this all about? This isn't some art project. That's for certain. I would say you knew each other very well, and there's so much more here that you're not sharing. You and Alistair knew each other. You two had a weird friendship, made a lot of strange recordings, and later he went missing, and that's the story.
That's the story.
How much of an idiot do you think I am?
As you know now, there were many different versions of John Herman that did not need to lie to Tom or Carol. There are versions of John Herman that told the truth when asked if he knew Alistair Glamis, because he honestly had never known him. I replay and listen to the other John Hermans often. I even played some of them for you, and even now, I still search their voices for some kind of secret knowledge. I search their word choice for any clue that they too might be lying. But no, I don't think they are. I can hear the sincerity in their voices. My voices. I wanted you to know the person I could have been had I never befriended Alistair Glamis. Pieces of those men are inside me. But alas, poor listener, I knew him well.
Something really terrible happened to you two. Something really, really terrible.
I didn't think Tom was an idiot. I just knew that I couldn't tell him the full story. I decided that I needed to tell Tom Allegost enough to keep him safe. Exactly what Alistair Glamis had attempted to do with me. Alistair Glamis might as well have been an alien from outer space, or a ghost, or a unicorn. But I told Tom that it didn't matter. To me, he was a friend with secrets. Alistair himself described himself as living in a world in which he was never born. At face value, it was complete nonsense. But he would return to that concept many times, and every time he brought it up, he got a grim look on his face, and soon he also revealed small bits, glimpses of his personal background, including the story of his father and how the two had arrived in Barton, New Hampshire. Alistair said he had a secret he wanted to tell me. He shared that his father and mother had had a relationship in the late 70s when his mother was studying abroad in Scotland. She met the older man, who was into meditation and world travel and little else. Alistair said that he had no connection to this man when he was growing up. His parents were long estranged. Not until his father self-published a book called The Incredible Being was he even traceable. Alistair secretly, meaning without his mother's knowledge, tracked down the author and began corresponding with him. This man, Samuel Badeley, was immediately fascinating to Alistair. He didn't seem as brutally selfish and self-absorbed as his mother had made him out to be. Badeley was a deep thinker. He sent his son poetry. He suggested plays for his son to read, movies to watch, songs to listen to. Ultimately, the two agreed that it would be best not to tell Alistair's mother of their interactions. Until it was the right moment. If ever. But the issue was forced when Alistair's mother found the copy of The Incredible Being in her son's bedroom. She was devastated. Alistair revealed that he had been communicating with his father for months. She forbid all communication with him, which in turn inspired him to run away. I have a secret I want to tell you.
What is it?
I feel embarrassed that I never told you.
Clearly not embarrassed enough that you aren't recording this right now.
You're right. So, when I was a kid, I ran away from home.
Really?
Yeah. I guess I felt being a big brother was a little too much for me. I didn't tell anyone except for Ricky Rawls. And he ended up telling on me. I spent one night out in the cold.
So, why are you telling me this now?
I guess I just want you to know that sometimes I don't have control. I get overwhelmed. And I run away.
Well, you better not run away anytime soon, because I'll hunt you down and kick your butt.
I hope you do.
Alistair Glamis ran away to meet his father, and when he arrived, he found that his mother had been right all along. Despite the thoughtful correspondence, the poetry, the music, Samuel Badeley was indeed a self-absorbed bohemian. Among his many quirks, the old man was obsessed with recording himself and listening to those recordings. Alistair was missing for 3 days before the police caught up with the runaway. Samuel Badeley made his son listen to his recordings over and over again. They also talked about history, a secret history. When the police showed up and arrested Badeley for kidnapping and child endangerment, Badeley didn't even seem upset. Alistair said that he was calm, that as he was being handcuffed, his father told him to come and find him. And then he went to jail. Alistair went back home to his mother, but the damage had been done, and he would soon get the chance to come and find him, as his father had instructed.
Hello, John? This is Tom. You need to call me immediately. I mean, like, right now. I don't know what's happening, but I think you know. I can't even say out loud what just happened to me. Please call me now.
After his father went to jail, Alistair says he didn't even go to school, and
Instead, he would lie on his bed and think about the recordings that his father had played for him. He thought about the history and one strange, terrifying day. Alistair came face to face with himself.
John, I just heard from Julie Allegost. She's pretty shaken up. I guess Tom never came home last night. I don't know if you know what's going on with him, but she really deserves a call. She's really worried.
I will now share with you how Alistair came to be in Barton, New Hampshire. You see, after he came face to face with himself, he discovered his time was coming. And when his time came, he traveled to another place. He did as his father instructed him. He came and found him. But while the Samuel Badeley he found was similar to the man he knew, this Samuel Badeley was not his father. This Samuel Badeley had had no children. When Alistair showed up at this man's front door and told the old man his story, this Samuel Badeley said that he had waited for this particular moment his entire life, but that he never expected it in this form, a son. A plan was made to change their names and escape to a remote area so that they could figure out what to do next. Badeley chose a new name, Glamis, inspired by the castle where he had met Alistair's mother. In this place, this version, the two had never had a child together. Now, the newly named Sam and Alistair Glamis went north with no destination. But eventually, they reached Barton, New Hampshire, a remote town in the Great Northern Woods. There, Sam prepared a small cabin like he was preparing a bunker for the fallout of a war. When Alistair asked his father what he was afraid of, the old man said that no matter where they go, how far they run, they will come, and they will keep coming.
Hello, John. This is Tom Allegost. Well, I imagine you know who I am. We need to talk. Hello, John Herman. I don't know if you know who I am.
Hello,
but I need
John
to talk
Herman.
To you.
My
don't
name is Tom.
Know if you know who I am,
I know
but
you
I
are.
Need to talk to you.
I know what
my
you
name
have
is Tom.
Done.
This
and
is Tom.
I know
how
could
you
do
are.
This to talk?
How could you let
this
happen?
This
is Tom
Allegost.
Knew it was
please
going to happen.
Call me back.
I need to
hello,
talk to
John.
This
and
is
Tom.
You let it happen.
I'm scared.
Hello, John.
I don't
this
know
is
what
Tom.
To do.
How could you let this
I
happen?
I talk to.
You knew it was going to happen. You knew, and you let it happen.
Murder most foul, as in the best it is. But this most foul, strange and unnatural, haste me to know it, that I with wings as swift as meditation or the thoughts of love may sweep to my revenge. In my next episode, I will go deep into the knowledge that possessed Samuel Badeley to take his newfound son into the Great North Woods. The secret history for which this is the latest chapter. In the meantime, thank you to John and Danielle Herman for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ben von Wildenhaus, Ross Boyd, and Rudy Sims for providing the music. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk in 2 weeks.
Partners in Crime Media.